Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 59. My name is John. You give me fever when you kiss me. Fever when you hold me tight. Fever in the morning. Fever all through the night. At my wife's suggestion, I asked some co-workers if they wanted to do an informal holiday celebration dinner followed by some karaoke. We settled on the first Saturday in December and selected a little Italian restaurant that was pretty centrally located for everybody and just a couple of blocks away from a decent bar with karaoke. The dinner was less than what we had hoped. Drinks flowed freely at the bar, but I was the only one who sang that evening, as everyone else either didn't sing to begin with or pussed out. But everybody seemed to have fun. I was the last to leave the bar, as I had one more song I wanted to sing and everybody else was getting tired. Lightweights. I drove home with the windows down part of the way because I just love cold air on a night drive home. I went to bed feeling just fine. And I woke up with a 104 degree fever. Just like that. I had no indication of sickness the night before. No fatigue, no sore throat, no congestion, certainly no fever. My body ached all over, but that could have been just as much from the yard work I had done the day before as an illness. I was under a blanket and a quilt, and I still shivered. I love the word ague because I did have the chills and occasional sweats, but the connotation of that word is implied that those symptoms are caused by malaria. I slept most of that Saturday, as the fever slowly dropped and settled at 102.5. And having slept through the night, I got up just long enough to take some over-the-counter medicine and call in sick to work, and then slept another 7 hours on that Monday. Now that it was over 24 hours since the fever started, I mustered the strength to drive to a nearby clinic. After about an hour's worth of tests, it was discovered I had the flu. In fact, the doctor told me I was the first person they had seen with that particular strain that season. I was thinking about how I never get a flu shot, and this year was no exception, and how maybe I should think about getting one, as this is the third year in a row I've been hit with an illness that has put me in bed for more than a day. However, as the thought was still in my head, the doctor said the strain that I had was not covered by this year's flu shot. It would not have mattered if I had the shot. This illness would have happened anyway. The flu shot is not a catch-all. It is merely the CDC's best guess as to what strains of flu are going to be around in a given year. I'm missing work. I like being able to stay home and sleep and watch movies in the few waking hours I have when I'm sick. But I need to earn my living. So the doctor, because I had the first symptoms less than 48 hours prior, prescribed Tamiflu. Now, just last week, I saw an article that stated that Tamiflu was largely ineffective. All I can say is I started taking it that evening. My fever was gone by noon the next day. I still slept to get my body as much recovery time as possible, but I was back at work on Wednesday. To be honest, I was still very tired and I probably should have stayed home and rested one more day, but I was easily functional enough to drive to and from work and stay awake and productive all day long. Why am I telling you all this? Because I have an analogy I want to present to you. I've said this at least a couple of times before in previous podcasts. Collectivism could work, but it only works if it is voluntary. Once you force someone to join your collective, it becomes an act of evil. It doesn't matter that the person you're forcing in would be better off in your collective. If you don't give people the right to eschew the collective and go their own way, then you become the bad guy. And just as an aside, to make sure my position is in context, when I say you need to let a person go their own way, I mean if a person is not maliciously and deliberately violating anyone else's rights or placing others in involuntary peril, then that person should be allowed to do whatever he or she wants without any interference. Unfortunately, collectives rarely work that way in the real world. Once a group has things go well for them, they get this overinflated group ego that makes them believe, hey, if these rules we've set for ourselves work so great for us, then they'll work great for everyone. They don't take into consideration that not everyone is willing to conform to their group's morality. It never occurs to them that not everyone on the outside is willing to make the same sacrifices the group members have made in their lives for the sake of their group's regulations. But the overinflated ego of the group tells them that they are more powerful together than those who are apart. So if people aren't willing to voluntarily conform to the group will find a way to make them conform. They'll start with ridicule. If that doesn't work, they'll demonize. And once they have the proper momentum, anyone who hasn't capitulated will be met with force. Now, force comes in many degrees, but the same quietus. Sure, in America, they'll likely go to the government, if they are not already ensconced in that position, and persuade the powers that be with their numbers that their way of thinking is so superior that it must be made mandatory. If not the nation, then at least in their own little corner of it. The powers that be, again, if they are not already part of the collective, ponder. The government does not ponder if the idea actually has merit. Rather, they ponder how backing such a group will affect the continuation of their power. Will backing this group's idea give me the appearance of doing something for the masses? Will backing this group's idea sway people to view me in a positive light? And most importantly, will backing this group's idea get me re-elected? Or, if I have term limits, will it help my party keep this political position? So, if the answer is yes to those questions, then the powers that be support the group's idea. If they think they can get away with it, they'll just write up a law telling everybody to follow it. If they can't get away with autonomous enactment, they will take to the campaign. They go to the public and tell them they need to vote on it. If they're lucky, it won't be a national election that gets exponentially more people to the polls, or maybe they'll just hold off until they can do it with nothing else drawing voters in. They'll concentrate their strategy to the media that best support their cause. If it's a conservative group, maybe they'll play an ad on the radio station that carries Rush Limbaugh. If it's a liberal group, maybe they'll buy some ad time on their local cable carrier's CNBC station. And it will simply be more ridicule and demonizing. Look at those stupid people over there doing those stupid things that you don't like. If you enact our idea, we'll make that illegal. Follow our idea, or else those other guys will take over, and you don't want that to happen, do you? That isn't our America. And all it takes in those quiet little elections nobody else cares about is a small group of rabid followers who are willing and able to get to the polls. And it becomes law. And the politician gets the glory and the increased power. And the group claims moral victory for their cause. And some people say, fuck them, I'll do what I want. And they go against the new law. But the law has something these deviants don't. Law enforcement. And you can't say that without saying force. In America, that law enforcement always has a type of tool with them. It is a tool that is used for protection. It is a tool that, in sick irony, certain advocates vie to keep others from using it as protection. It is relatively simple, fast, and violent. If you resist the force of the law enforcement, that tool will be pointed at you and quite possibly be used. As another aside, this is why it is absolutely paramount that anyone who serves as law enforcement be held to a higher standard than everyone else in regard to following the law. But it is also important that they not be brainwashed into believing bad laws are acceptable to enforce. Unfortunately, even good cops choose to enforce bad laws, which makes you wonder if they are still good cops. So after the collective's idea is passed as law, when a deviant, and I use that word in its purest form, when a deviant says, fuck you, I'll do what I want, the law enforcement steps in with their threat of the use of guns and tries to make the deviant conform. Maybe it's with a fine. Maybe it's with jail time. Maybe if they resist, they get put into a chokehold until they lose consciousness. And vital signs. And maybe, just maybe, if your violation of that collectivist idea turned law is egregious enough, the law enforcement will come at you with guns pointed, safeties off, and laser sights dotting your body. Because sometimes it's just not enough to go after those lawbreakers. Sometimes an example must be made. In certain other countries, all that political posturing and voting bullshit doesn't exist. If you don't conform to the collective powers that be, you will have a gun fired at you. That is why I say the force is simply a matter of degrees. The fact that there are layers of bureaucracy between you and the gun is of no importance. If you are not maliciously and deliberately violating anyone else's rights or placing others in involuntary peril, and yet a collective is still trying to prevent you from doing your thing, then you are in danger. It doesn't matter that the collective is doing it with a smiling face, with the apparent backing of the majority of the population, or if they're doing it with the barrel of a gun firmly pressed against your forehead. If you are not maliciously and deliberately violating anyone else's rights or placing others in involuntary peril, they have no right to force you, coerce you, or nudge you to follow their vision of morality. Not like that has ever stopped any collective from trying to force others into going along with their version of morality. Maybe it's happened. Unfortunately, there's no way to prove it. Maybe somewhere along the line, some group of people got all full of themselves, thinking their way of life was so superior that they should make other people follow it. And maybe they were all together in a meeting somewhere, talking about how great they are and their plans to force it on their community. And maybe almost everyone in the group was listening intently to the speakers and nodding their heads in agreement at every point. And maybe there was somebody sitting and listening intently to the speechification who felt something was not quite right. And maybe, just maybe, that person had the courage to stand up in the middle of it all and say something like, "Everyone, I know this is good for us, and it may be good for others, but not everyone will see it the same way. We should respect other people's point of view, and talk to them about our ideas, and persuade them to try our way, rather than endeavoring to force them to conform." And maybe they listened to reason. And monkeys might fly out of my butt. I believe that was the great philosopher Aristotle who said that. Or maybe it was Mike Myers. I could have confused the two. I doubt there has ever been a group caught up in the group think who ever stopped themselves from an attempt to force their ideals on others. Honestly, the only time I ever heard of such a concept outside of libertarian circles is the Bible. Seriously, I've mentioned this in the podcast before. When Christ first sends out his disciples to spread his word, he tells them that if you go into a town and they reject my teachings, the disciples were to shake the dust off their shoes and move on. No, don't beat them up until they submit to our philosophy. Don't run to whoever enforces the law and have them make the people obey. Don't take over the government and force everybody to comply to your morality. If only that precedent could have stayed with Christianity. If only that idea could seep through the various levels of concrete that seem to shield every collective's brain. If the idea is good, you don't need to force people to go along with it. Simple as that. Not every idea works for everyone. No matter how good you think your ideas are, there will always, always be some who don't agree with you. At that point, if you really think your idea is good, you just have to let them go. If you try to force others to conform to your way of thinking, then your idea can't be that good. Unfortunately, that's not the way it continues to be in this world. That's how we get a neoconservative collective in North Carolina who succeeds in banning gay marriage in their state, a position originally supported by Barack Obama. That's how we get a progressive collective who succeeds in stealing the rightfully earned wages of American citizens in the form of an income tax. That's how the fearmongers in more and more municipalities are preventing people from using cell phones while driving. That's how the puritanical collectivists in Texas still deny the sale of beer before noon on Sundays. Of course, that's also how anywhere from 2.5 to 7.5 million of Ukrainians die in the Holodomor. That's how an estimated 6 million Jews die in the Holocaust. That's how anywhere from 18 to 45 million die in the Great Leap Forward. That's how 12 are assassinated in Paris for political cartoons. It's all a matter of degrees. You may consider yourself lucky if you live in a country that puts some cushion between you and the gun, such as the United States. But that doesn't mean that you aren't being pushed and nudged and programmed to accept more and more fascism. Once you're used to it, the layers between you and the gun are stripped away. And it's too late. That's why you push back now to stop the atrophy. That's why you stand against the progression of bureaucratic infestation. That's why you support liberty and freedom for people you disagree with. That's why individual liberty and personal responsibility must be paramount over all collective schemes that seek to trade freedom for an overhyped benefit. The only way things will get better is if people take their own lives into their own hands and not rely or expect other people to take care of them. And I'm pretty sure by now I know what you're thinking. For the love of God, Rhino, what the hell does this have to do with your flu? Like I said, this is an analogy. Think of my case of the flu as the evils of the world. Poverty, disease, war, greed, things like that. The flu shot is collectivism. Because, let's be honest, it's a remedy prescribed by a bunch of central planners as a solution for the masses, even though it only works if they guess right. The Tamiflu? Well, that's something that is gaining more and more popularity in recent years, even though some have recently tried to denounce it as ineffective. Yes, I'm saying Tamiflu, in this analogy, is libertarianism. Just recently, the Associated Press reported this year's flu vaccine was only 23% effective. That seems pretty shitty to me. But the funny thing is, even at its absolute top-of-the-line best, the flu vaccine is only effective 60% of the time. USA Today wrote a story last September about how less than half of the U.S. gets a flu shot. Okay, let's take a number that is less than half the U.S. population. 150 million. Best case scenario. If 150 million people are getting flu shots and everything is working at its optimal levels, 60 million people are wasting their time. As it stands now, over 115 million people are wasting their time on a flu shot that has 23% effectiveness. There's 168 million people in this scenario who didn't get the flu shot, and they're just as well off as the 115 million people who got the shot that didn't work. And if you'll recall my story at the beginning, if I had gotten the flu shot, I would have been one of the 77% who wasted their time, because I got a strain that the central planners didn't account for. All their great minds getting together, thinking they know what's best for people, missed what was best for the person. Me. That's central planning for you. That's collectivism. They look at poverty and say, we must do something about it. So they force everyone to contribute to a government program and throw that money at the problem. Now, decades later, there's still poverty. Not because they didn't do it right, but because they can't do it right. You can't eliminate poverty. There will always be those who are poor. Look at every form of government throughout human history. Every single one had affluent, and every single one had impoverished. Why? Because that's humanity. Some people don't want to put in the effort. Some people just want to wallow in their own filth and pity. Feeding them pity and a stipend, financed by other people's money, isn't going to change them. War will likely always be with us, Why? Because that's humanity. Some people and groups want to hurt others. Responding with more violence that causes innocents to die in the periphery will not change that. In fact, it will only cause more people to hate and to desire war. Greed will always be with us. Why? Because that's humanity. Some people just want more, and they want excess. But just because someone has more than you doesn't make them greedy. It doesn't mean that they got their wealth by ill-gotten means. However, assuming all rich people are greedy and got their wealth via ill-gotten means, and therefore that gives you the moral right to force them to surrender their earnings in the form of taxes, is simply more greed, and is only going to widen the rift. These ills you rail against, under the misguided notion that you can prevent them and maybe someday cure them with your central planning, is as foolish as your flu shot. The only difference is the flu shot is about 22 percentage points more effective this year than your average collectivist scheme. But like I said, there are plenty of people who will say that Tamiflu doesn't work either. It only works if you start using it within 48 hours of your symptoms appearing. And even then, for some people it's ineffective, the percentage of which is still in debate. But that's all the more reason why it works as an analogy for libertarianism. It's only effective if you use it to combat collectivism at an early stage. Because once the illness has settled in, it's harder and harder to cure. But if you use it, and it's effective, it's easier to overcome the sickness and heal the proverbial body. And I'll be honest, I don't think libertarianism is for everyone. I think there are some people who crave the control of some kind of central government. They need religious leaders to guide them. Or they need media talking heads to tell them what to think. Or they need political megalomaniacs to tell them how to live. In this analogy, Tamiflu wouldn't work. Their body would reject it. But that's them. All I can tell you is this. It worked for me. So I don't care what everyone else is taking to get over their flu. I don't want them forcing me to do something that I don't want to do. And that's what libertarianism is all about. You finding out what's right for you. You taking control of your life. You making the decisions for yourself, for better or worse. If you want to take the flu shot, take the damn flu shot. If you want to take the Tamiflu, take the damn Tamiflu. If you don't want to take anything, don't take anything. Just like in life, find what makes you happy, live at peace with others, respect each other's rights, and we'll make the world a better place. The ills of society, the flu, if you will, can be minimized if we all have liberty and we all have personal responsibility. It can happen. Or maybe this is all a fever dream. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.